You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Welcome to the program, Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. We're down to Danette. Fritzy is taking his son to Syracuse and his first day of school. So Fritzy is out for the rest of the day. But he's here in spirit, of course, and helping us book some great guests. Coming up, Nick Saban will join us. Mack Brown, the North Carolina head football coach. Jeff Van Gundy on the call last night for ESPN ABC, their NBA analyst. He'll join us coming up in about 15 minutes. And the great actor Bryan Cranston, all of that coming up on the show. A lot of great entries in nextgreatpodcast.com, the contest that I came up with in conjunction with our partnership with iHeartRadio. And we have over 450 entries right now. You have until the end of the month. We're going to pick up to 10 semifinalists, give them $1,000 producing a pilot episode. And a lot of the entries have nothing to do with sports. And I encourage you, if you have a great idea, all you want is somebody to hear you, listen to your idea, and give you some feedback. And then we're going to have America vote on it. America will vote on the next great podcast at nextgreatpodcast.com. And then I'm going to be in partnership with you. Really excited about this. And judging from the entries, it sounds like you are as well. But nextgreatpodcast.com, and you have until the end of the month. You have until Monday to switch over to Peacock, download the app. We'll be on Peacock on Monday. And we did a tutorial. It's really simple, 30 seconds or less. You'll have the app. You put in your email, you come up with your password, and you're on Peacock, and you'll be able to watch this show starting Monday. And we do want to say good morning to those watching on YouTube.com/The Dan Patrick Show. Say good morning to Chat Row and those listening to the program on our 362 affiliates around the world. We'll have a poll question, play of the day, stat of the day as well, but let's begin with the headlines. The number one seeds in both conferences, the Lakers and Bucks, did not look good last night. And neither team looked good in the 8 regular season bubble games leading up to the postseason. But I think everybody was under the impression, yeah, but come playoff time, that's when you flip the switch. I've never seen the switch. I've been in a lot of buildings, a lot of rooms, and I look around. I don't see that switch because it's not there. You keep thinking, oh, you flipped the switch. The Lakers still struggle on offense. And if you can't score on Portland, you can't score on anybody. And the Bucks, you can't be reliant on the Greek Freak as much as you are. You can't have that much of a separation between the Greek Freak and your second best player, Chris Middleton. You can't do it, even against Orlando. And maybe this is the only win that Orlando has. But Orlando, at least, should get your attention. And certainly the Blazers, they have the Lakers' attention. The top seed struggles, you know, that could speak to the unusual circumstances. You don't have a home court advantage, but you got an opponent in the Blazers who are really a 4 or 5 seed, I think. If everybody's healthy, then they're a 4 or 5 seed. But this is going to be a tough out for the Lakers for a variety of reasons. The Lakers have been banged up. The Blazers have been playing in a playoff mode for the last couple of weeks. But you can't make excuses. And people are going to make excuses today. Portland was the better team last night. The better all-around team. Top to bottom, the Blazers were a better team. And if the Lakers aren't going to shoot better from the three-point range, you're going down in flames. 5 of 32. And Anthony Davis, if you're not the best player on the floor every single night, the Lakers are not going to win a championship. Plain and simple. You can't go 8 for 24. And he waits for things to come to him. He's got to be aggressive here. You know, these games mean everything. Kenny Smith mentioned this at halftime. Anthony Davis almost waits for a double team. You must be proactive. And for those of you who are going to criticize LeBron for deferring, I'm going to take you back to the game-winning shot that Kyle Kuzma had a couple of weeks ago or a week ago. And I said, if this happened in the playoffs, we would be critical of LeBron if Kuzma doesn't hit the shot. It was a regular season game. They ran a design play. Kuzma hit the shot, the three-pointer, and everybody was like, okay, now they got their third option. You can spin it however you want to. LeBron played great. The Lakers get off to a slow start, as they have every single game in the bubble. And then they come back and they played pretty good defense, second, third, fourth quarter. But LeBron had a wonderful night, and he deferred a little bit. You have 16 assists. I'm sure somebody's going to be critical of LeBron James today. Exactly. Not exactly breaking news. I want to find somebody who's not critical of LeBron today, because I'll be in the minority today. He played great. He did defer. He got everybody involved. He did what he's been doing during the regular season. I don't worry about LeBron being the problem here. It's everybody else. No, Alex Caruso, what are you, 1-for-6? Anthony Davis didn't play well. Kuzma. It just felt like Portland was going to, go ahead, take the shot. And Portland, maybe it's adrenaline. I thought that they were going to be spent, but give them credit. They played hard, played well, pulled out the win. And game two of those series have become a lot more important and a lot more fun for us to watch. But we'll talk to Jeff Van Gundy about this, because you saw the Bucks, and it felt like the Bucks were what we thought they were going to do. Hey, they're playing Orlando. We'll just get out there, run up and down the floor a little bit, and spend the rest of the afternoon chilling by the pool. And all of a sudden, Orlando's like, hey, guys, we're going to make you work a little bit harder. I watched a lot of the Rockets and the Thunder, and I thought the Thunder, if you're going to come out and make a lasting impression, get the Rockets' attention without Russell Westbrook, last night was the night to do it. And OKC did not look good. I give the Rockets a lot of credit. Played well. Charles Barkley was trending last night. Number one story. He was trending. He says if the Blazers beat the Lakers last night, he thinks they'll sweep the Lakers. And then the studio guys, Kenny, Shaq, and Ernie, were like, whoa, what? And then Chuck, at halftime of the Rockets and the Thunder, said James Harden is the best offensive player he's ever seen. One-on-one offensive player he's ever seen. Now, I'm fascinated by James Harden, and I do think he is unique. But I don't know how Jordan would play with today's rules. I don't know how Kobe would play if he was just starting his career with today's rules. I don't know what some of the other great scorers in the history of the game would be like. I don't know that. And it's dangerous when we do this, because it's generational. When somebody plays and how they were guarded, how they played, what you were allowed to do, not allowed to do. I mean, you saw two technicals in the Dallas game that we would have not even stopped play 15, 20 years ago in the NBA. What Porzingis did by challenging Morris, we wouldn't even have said anything about it. The officials would have said, play on. So it's a different game. But Charles said that Harden can get his shot against anybody almost at any time. He is in the conversation of unstoppable. Now, he stops himself, but he is unstoppable at times. And there are very few in the history of the game. Would I say he's the greatest offensive one-on-one player? No, because Kareem is the greatest offensive weapon the game has ever seen. Nobody could stop the Skyhook. Nobody. Nobody. In the history of the game, nobody. I don't care who you are, you couldn't have stopped that. And so if we're talking about what is unstoppable, Kareem was unstoppable. Michael could be stopped. He could be contained. But if Kareem, certainly early in his career, if you got a chance to watch him, it was unbelievable. He could have averaged 40 a game if he wanted to. But he came from a team tradition with UCLA, and, he was just not that kind of player. Yeah, McLevin.
See, all these guys, Harden, Luka, and Giannis, they dribble anywhere they want, because if you breathe on a guy in the perimeter, it's a foul. That was never like that. Giannis could never dribble all over the court.
No.
20 years ago. And no. Say, I don't know about Harden. How would he have played in the Jordan era?
He's so physical.
You think he would be strong enough to do that?
Oh, my gosh, yes. Like, he's a big guy, big guard. He looks like he could play a lineman for the Cowboys. I mean, he's a physical guy, and he is so good at angles. Scorers are so good at angles. You don't have to be the most athletic, but you have to be really smart in how you attack. And Harden is brilliant at how he puts you on his hip, gets by you. Do they blow the whistle far too often nowadays? Absolutely. They ruin the game at times. Interrupt the game. Let it go. Because, you know, back when Jordan played, you could put your hand, I could put my hand on you. And guys would just put their hand, lean on you. You can't do anything now. But Rock, you know, Harden takes advantage of the rules. And I give him credit. The great ones understand what they can and can't do. What can I get away with? What are you going to call? But Harden is one of the great one-on-one players in the history of the game. Would I say that he's the most unstoppable? I would not. But he's in the conversation because his ability with a great handle, got great feet, and he's able to do that step-back jumper. The only way he stops himself is when he misses those step-back jumpers. But if he gets you on his hip, he's getting to the hoop. And they're going to make that call. So Van Gundy will join us. We'll talk to him about who should be more nervous, the Lakers or the Bucks. We also have a story that's brewing in the Big Ten. And this is from Jeff Snook, who is considered an Ohio State insider. He's written some books about his alma mater, the football program. And he had this morning. Breaking news, Ohio State's athletic director working on a plan to get five other Big Ten teams to participate in a 10-game schedule coming up this fall. Let me take you back to that Sunday night where the presidents of the Big Ten got together on a conference call. And I know that people have pushed back on this and said they did not have a vote that night. Because that next morning I told you that there was a vote with the presidents. It was 12-2. Because it was Nebraska and Iowa, their presidents wanted to play football. The other presidents, led by the athletic director of Ohio State, Gene Smith, did not want to play football. And nobody can refute that. Iowa and Nebraska's presidents, they wanted to play. I haven't heard any other presidents who came out of that conference call who said, hey, we wanted to play too. But now you have Gene Smith, the athletic director, who might be the most powerful athletic director, certainly one of them in the country. He has full support of Ohio State's president, and they're working behind the scenes. What they want to do is you would have Penn State, Nebraska, Iowa. They're trying to flip Michigan and Wisconsin to join them. Now, if you're trying to tell me they didn't have a vote, then why do you have to flip Wisconsin and Michigan? Because, well, they voted against playing. That's why. Illinois and Northwestern not involved in the conversation because of state guidelines or restrictions on COVID, I'm told. But you've got the athletic directors involved in this right now, and Gene Smith is leading the charge. So what is happening is they want to have a schedule where if you have 10 games, you play each other twice. Sources said Monday night the Big Ten presidents never voted on the issue before the conference adjourned its meeting last week. Well, I disagree with that. It wasn't a ballot box. It's semantics here. But nobody can refute that Iowa and Nebraska presidents wanted to play. I did not have any other presidents on record saying we wanted to play. So what is going to happen? Also, keep in mind the governor of Ohio, Mike DeWine, on Tuesday approved high school football to be played this fall. That's a big deal. But as far as how this is being presented, and I'll go back to what a coach from the Big 12 told my source, this is a huge advantage. If the Big 12 can play and the Big 10 can't, because in their minds, they had just moved past the Big 10. The SEC, ACC, Big 12, if they pull it off this season and the Big 10 doesn't, this will be, there'll be long-lasting ramifications for the Big 10. Gene Smith knows this. But what changed in the last 5 days, 6 days, I'm not sure. But something did, because I was told Gene Smith was leading the charge to not play football in the Big Ten. My source told me that this morning. Two sources told him that Gene Smith was leading the charge. Not the presidents, the athletic director at Ohio State. But something's changed, and they're looking at a 10-game schedule coming up this fall. Yeah, Paul.
1 week ago, Gene Smith, the Ohio State athletic director, tweeted this, quote, Ohio State has continued its communications with the Big Ten Conference office regarding a scenario to still play fall football. He said that a week ago that he and his people were pushing to still have a fall football schedule. That doesn't jibe with the fact that he recommended not playing to his president during that vote.
Well, he could have said that, but you know, changed after it. Because now when you start to look at, I mean, you got to answer questions here. How is it the Big 12, ACC, and SEC are getting away with this? And we're not playing football? At least trying to play football? And I don't know what happened with, you know, the athletic directors or the presidents or the commissioner of the Big Ten. But I kept, from what my source said, there was very little dialogue that the coaches and athletic directors were involved in with that decision to not play football in the Big Ten. By the way, you haven't heard a peep out of anybody in the Pac-12. Nothing. So Pac-12 is not playing football. I was also told, my source said, this is a long shot to happen in the Big Ten. But I think because you got Justin Fields, the Ohio State quarterback, you have a defensive back at Ohio State. His last name is Wade. His parents or his dad is going to go to the NCAA or Big Ten headquarters in Illinois Friday. So you have all of this groundswell in Columbus. And then where is your athletic director on the same page? And that's what's happening right now. The athletic director, Gene Smith, is on the same page with the players and Ryan Day, their coach. Yeah, Paul.
Dan, you grew up there. You're still an Ohio State person deep, deep down in your history. If I told you a month ago that Ohio State high school football would be playing, the pro teams, the Browns and the Bengals would be playing, and Ohio State football would not be playing. with the hierarchy of football importance in that state?
Well, I just don't know why they didn't go kicking and screaming. That's the one thing that surprises me. Even if you do it for show, and maybe this is just for show, but that's where you have to be out in front of this and say, look, we want to play. But I think in compliance with the Big Ten, Ohio State was going to be a good team member there, a good, you know, school partnership there, and say, we're either all in or we're not. But I'll go back to what I told you on Monday morning 2 weeks ago. Iowa and Nebraska wanted to play, and I did not hear any other president who said, and that's why there was a 12-2 vote that they weren't going to play. So they overruled Iowa and Nebraska. And then Nebraska goes, we're going to go rogue. Maybe we can join the Big 12. I didn't hear any other school say that. Iowa was planning on doing something, but I didn't hear any of these other schools. So if people want to have semantics here on the vote, go ahead. By the way, this program brought to you by BuyRaycon, buyraycon.com/Patrick. 15% off the wireless earbuds, the way to go. BuyRaycon.com/Patrick. Take a break. Jeff Van Gundy, the Blazers-Lakers game last night. How nervous should the Lakers be? And if we're going to put some blame on somebody, who gets the blame? We'll talk about that coming up next. 20 after the hour here, Dan Patrick Show. Full Sail University helped me. A couple of years ago, we launched the Dan Patrick School of Sportscasting, accelerated bachelor's degree in sportscasting. You learn everything from in front of the camera, behind the camera, podcasting, radio, everything in between. You want to be a producer, director, you want to be a reporter, you want to be on camera, you want to be an anchor. We're teaching all of those, interviewing skills, you name it. And the beauty is, you know, when we came up with the curriculum, and Gus Ramsey, who worked with me at ESPN for the 18 years that I was there, you know, we just started thinking, what do we have the students learning? And we have such a great faculty, real world experience, that we've got over 100 years of experience with all these faculty members being in the business, teaching you, really giving you a roadmap on how to attack this job field, the most competitive job field probably in America. Full Sail University, earn your bachelor's degree in about half the time, as short as 20 months. Choose to earn your degree online or that beautiful campus in Orlando, Florida. Full Sail University. Go to fullsail.edu/Dan Patrick. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Charles Barkley was trending last night. prior to the Blazers-Lakers game on Inside the NBA, Sir Charles had this to say.
If the Portland Trail Blazers win tonight, they're going to sweep the Lakers.
Sweep!
Oh, I'm telling you.
They all had a good chuckle with that. And then the Blazers go out and pick up the victory. Jeff Van Gundy on the call for ESPN ABC. And what was your reaction when you heard that Charles said if the Blazers win last night, they'll sweep the Lakers?
Well, interestingly, I had said just the opposite the day before on a show. I said that I thought that the Lakers had a better opportunity of sweeping the Blazers than the Blazers had of winning the series. And last night, you know, Portland shot under 40% from the floor, and they still won.
Yeah.
And so I got to give them a lot of credit. I think they were hardened, you know, because they had to win so many games. And just like Milwaukee, you know, at the end of one, the Lakers were down double digits, and so they were playing from behind the whole night.
Yeah, and they've been doing that every single game in the bubble. If I didn't watch the game last night, how would you sum up why the Lakers lost?
Awful shooting, you know, 5-for-32 from three. Terrible from the free throw line. LeBron and Anthony Davis were a combined 16-for-24. And then LeBron and Anthony Davis, who have to absolutely carry them offensively, Davis was 8-for-24. LeBron was 9-for-20. So, you know, it was a substandard night offensively all the way around. They didn't turn it over. They played really hard. They were up on the backboard. But their offensive skill is very limited. James and Davis have to be great.
Yeah, I think Anthony Davis, night in and night out, though, Coach, has got to be the best player on the floor. And these are the first real important games of his career. And I don't know if you ease into the playoffs. It felt like he lets the action sometimes come to him. He needs to be more aggressive. And I don't know how LeBron can facilitate that. You know, can you change somebody's personality? Because it might just be Anthony Davis's personality.
Well, I don't think you ever change somebody's personality, but you can help them to reach whatever maximum level of intensity they can. You know, L.A. all year has been dynamic in transition, and Davis got a couple in transition last night, but they've struggled in half court. They just don't have a lot of weapons. When you think about it, who else is going to be able to create a shot other than James or Davis? Without Rondo, Avery Bradley, I think they miss his defense and off-the-ball cutting and movement. I'm interested to see, do they put in somebody like Waiters to try to have another guy who can go off the dribble? He only played a minute last night, so I'm just interested. Their starting unit, it just doesn't, they didn't play well, and they haven't played well offensively in the half court.
Talking to Jeff Van Gundy, ESPN ABC analyst. He'll be on the call on Thursday, Oklahoma City and the Rockets, and then it'll be the Lakers and Blazers. If I'm Portland, what do I want the Lakers? What am I forcing or trying to get the Lakers to do?
Well, I think what you want to do is make sure you do a better job of keeping Anthony Davis off the line. And then I would double him on every low post or mid post catch and make that ball go to the other Lakers and see if they have enough offense on the weak side. And I think if the Lakers are able to get through this series, I have no doubts that they're going to, every team that plays them is going to try to test the Lakers to see if they have enough offense in the half court. And if you don't give the Lakers transition, if you're Terry Stotts, right, we turned the ball over 16 times and that led to some breakouts. But if we can just keep them in the half court, make them shoot it up over the top, they won't shoot 5-for-32 from three, but do they have enough shooting?
And then Portland, I didn't know. I thought they might be on fumes. You know, that adrenaline, and you've coached against teams with teams that they just seem to be relying on something internally, and Portland still has that last night. And I also thought the big men proved to be a pretty big difference for that team when I didn't think Whiteside, you know, who doesn't play that much, but then they relied on him last night. You just got a nice team contribution, and that's a team that's a better all-around overall top-to-bottom team than the Lakers are.
Well, I thought the, you know, winning the play-in game on the first night gave them that extra day off so that they had 2 days off in between games to plan and to recharge. And the thing I think Terry Stotts' team, you know, none of those guys had a big night last night. Yeah. None of them. No one shot well. They won shooting under 40%, but they got to the free throw line. And like you said, they got some timely contributions. Whiteside, Nurkic didn't have a particularly big night, but I thought, you know, he did some good things. Lillard's bomb obviously was an incredible shot, but they can, if I'm Terry Stotts, I'm saying we can play a lot better and we're going to need to play better because certainly the Lakers aren't going to shoot like that. I just thought they were more ready. And when, you know, Doug Collins used to always say the NBA is not a fourth quarter league. It's a first quarter league. And the team that's ready can play with a cushion the entire night. And that's exactly what happened, you know, for Portland. They were up double digits at the end of one, and that cushion allowed them to play free and with great confidence.
Barkley, at one point last night, halftime, I think Rockets and the Thunder, said that James Harden is, I think, the most unstoppable one-on-one player that he's ever seen. What do you make of that?
Well, I think certainly in this era with these rules, the spacing is so much greater now. The rules are tilted entirely to the offensive player. His skill level in this era of NBA basketball, of one-on-one, and the team he's on and how they've structured their team gives him maximum room. He's unguardable. And so if you are unguardable, to me, Oklahoma City is going to look back in that first game with regret that they allowed him, other than Schroeder, they didn't really play him with great discipline. They fouled him on jump shots. I just think that Houston, when you look at Harden and all that he is required to do for that team, he and Doncic, I don't think any two guys, and maybe James too, maybe those three, they have such a burden to create every good shot that you're going to get offensively. To have the stamina to do that, it requires true, true greatness. And I agree with Charles that, you know, Harden has done it for a long period of time in Houston, and he's done it exceptionally well.
Yeah, I mean, he's a powerful guy. He gets you on his hip. He can shoot the three. He's got great feet. He can get to the hoop there. But I always go back to the most unstoppable player of all time is Kareem, because nobody ever stopped that sky hook. Now, granted, he couldn't create his own shot unless, you know, Magic threw it in there. But I always go, Kareem would be the one guy that shot was never stopped.
Well, that's... And then, you know, Wilt in a different time, you know, era of basketball. You know, I don't know why Wilt's numbers get overlooked. The discrepancy between when he won a scoring title and the next best, right, was like, it was always like these staggering differences. And, you know, like, I don't know why, maybe because the lane was different and, you know, we don't have as much video, but it's...
But
like,
Jeff, I brought this up about Babe Ruth. Why is it we celebrate Babe Ruth and what he did, and we don't have any video of that, but we look at him as the greatest player of all time? Wilt is Babe Ruth, you know, obviously without the titles, but the stats, he dwarfs everybody, and we don't recognize those. I agree.
Well, and also, you know what's funny about that? Like, without the titles, he won two titles.
Yeah.
Like, we talk about it like this guy didn't win. He did. He just didn't win as much as Russell, right? And Russell played with, you know, in this incredible time. And you think about the stats that Wilt put up and those guys put up. There were only eight teams. They were playing the seven other best centers in the world all the time. They didn't get to pick on center number 28 and 29, yeah. like in today's NBA. Like what Wilt did, like, and like you said about Kareem too, like Kareem, like because it looks so easy, people don't realize the amount of physical contact that was allowed on perimeter players, post players, and still today post players, but there's just not that many of them. But the amount of contact and how different the rules were, the rules back then were all tilted for the defense. You know, there wasn't freedom of movement. There was hand checking. There was body blows. There was no flagrant fouls. I mean, it's like to score in that era the way Kareem did and so effortlessly, you're right. The sky hook is absolutely the most indefensible shot that I've ever seen in the NBA.
Well, and you go back to the Mavericks and the Clippers, you know, when you had Porzingis getting involved with Morris, 20 years ago, they wouldn't have stopped play. Like, you would have just said, play on. Like, there, that would have been nothing. But, you know, that is a prime example of, you know, the way the NBA is now and, you know, what they're trying to protect or enforce. But, you know, when you were coaching, you probably had a few of those dust up every single night. Nobody's getting teed up.
Yeah. I think common sense has to prevail. You know, the Porzingis ejection, I had as much problem with the first technical as I did with the second. And to me, both things were not overtly disrespectful, that it could lead you to an ejection. Now, I'm not saying that officials were wrong, Dan, but the policies are wrong. I've read so many times that we're trying to take the decision-making out of officiating. That's nonsense. Officiating is about being able to make decisions, advantage, disadvantage. It's the same with players, the difference with players, who can make better decisions. It's not just who has better skills. It's how to use a skill, when to use a skill. So I think sometimes we take perverse pleasure in the NBA in being tough on crime. And like, we're going to show them, you know, there's no air punches. Does anybody even care? Like, truly, there's a difference between an air punch directed at somebody, you're walking to some official, versus a natural reaction. And I just feel like, you know, long ago, I think it was Bill Simmons who first said it, but maybe I'm wrong, that every organization needs a vice president of common sense. And I think when we're talking about NBA officiating, common sense is so important. Decision-making is so important. Policies that try to keep our best players on the floor versus figure out ways to get them off the floor, I just think make for a better game.
If I had you and your brother have a free throw shooting contest where you shot 25 each, who would win?
Well, he's a better shooter, but I think his conditioning would, his lack of conditioning, he may really fatigue after 15 straight free throws. And if it's outside in the heat, I've got it. Because he would absolutely wilt. Yes.
And I'll leave you with this. I was watching the Clippers play against the Mavs, and Kawhi Leonard struck me as if I was going to attach a soundtrack to players, his would be like Miles Davis. There's a jazz feel to Kawhi Leonard. And I don't know why I thought that, but it just felt like he moves at a different speed and a different grace about him. I don't know, but I'm curious if we started attaching soundtracks to certain players by the way they played, that might be interesting. I don't know.
You know, that's actually good. I don't know too much about music, but he does play at his own pace and rhythm. He's not easy to speed up because of his strength and his size. So, you know, you were talking earlier about somebody getting somebody on their hip like Harden, and then you can go at your own pace. I feel Doncic is the same way. He looks like a middle linebacker, like at the point guard position, and he's not fleet of foot, but when he gets a half a step on you, it's hard to recover and get back in front. And these guys with this skill at their size and their strength and the vision they have, it's really hard to guard now. You know, you combine everything, rules, spacing, amount of shooting around. It's like video game type numbers these guys are putting up. And Leonard can seemingly get a good shot anytime he wants to.
And I did bring this up the other day, so full disclosure, where I said, you know, Luka is better than Larry Bird right now at the same age because Larry was still in college. And Doncic has been playing against grown men since he was 15. And his the way he plays, what was Larry when he got into the league? 23, maybe 24, because he sat out a year when he quit Indiana. Like Luka, where he is now, it's not unheard of to say he's going to be a better basketball player than Larry Bird.
Yeah, I think, like for me, comparison is the thief of joy. Because someone feels diminished
I know. When
you start saying things. And I think sometimes we jump ahead of ourselves when we say a young player is like an all-time great, because the true measuring stick of the all-time greats is the consistency, right? So Bird had this everyday consistency over a long period of time. You know, why is Jabbar one of the, you know, could be the greatest, or Jordan, right? They did it for a long period of time. Why is LeBron James considered one of the greatest, if not the greatest? It's the consistency over time. And really, I don't see anything being able to get in Luka's way to achieving that type of status if his health holds up, because the guy has skill, he has passion, he has vision. Like, if you have all of that, that's what Larry Bird, that's what he had, and that's what Doncic has. And I, you know, whether he's going to have the same team success that Bird had remains to be seen, and it's so dependent on who they can surround him with. But certainly Doncic is heading to be an all-time great if his health holds up.
And that's why I, you know, Zion makes me nervous. You know, he's must-see TV, and he's explosive, but, you know, when you're in a race with your body, you know, to stay in shape and be able to perform like that. Luka is going to be able to play the same way he's playing now, probably in 10 years from now, because it's not predicated on, hey, he's so explosive or he's so quick or whatever. It just feels like he plays like an old guy does when you go to a playground and some guy who's 50 who played, you know, in the Ivy League, and you're going, well, that guy's unstoppable. He knows how to play the game. And I think that what you see now is probably what we'll see in 10 years from now. And I can't make that same claim with Zion.
Hey, Dan, there's no one that played like Doncic at Harvard, Yale. Okay. No, but you're right as far as, you know, he's not relying on straight and true athleticism. And he has two areas he can improve on, like, which will make him, again, unguardable in today's game. He's a below average 3-point shooter, and he's a sub 80% free throw shooter for a guy who lives at the line. You just have, you know, slow incremental progress in both of those areas over the next 5 years. I mean, now you're dealing with, let's just say he gets to be an average or a slightly above average 3-point shooter, then there's no reason he shouldn't be an 80 plus free throw shooter, you know, and maybe he reduces his turnovers, you know, by, you know, maybe half or one a game. Those things at the margins make him significantly better. I mean, I think he has still potential to grow. I think he's going to be a multiple time MVP award winner because of the opportunity he has in Dallas and his greatness.
Great to talk to you, Jeff. As always, thanks. We appreciate your time.
All right, take care.
That's Jeff Van Gundy. He'll be on the call on Thursday at 3:30 Eastern, Oklahoma City, taking on the Rockets, and then at 9, Blazers, Lakers. Back with our play of the day after this. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live every day at youtube.com/The Dan Patrick Show. Did we settle on a poll question, McLovin?
Yeah, I put up who should be more worried, the Bucks or the Lakers. 72% said the Lakers.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Better opponent,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. Kyle in California joins us. Hi, Kyle.
Hey, DP. Morning, boys. You know, everybody's panicking after last night, understandably. But how I look at it, the Blazers didn't shoot well because the Lakers play great D. They have all year, top five defense. Lakers didn't shoot well because they're not great at shooting team. They'll shoot better. Blazers don't play great D. Fear not. Lakers Twitter will bully everybody else into shooting well. 17-53 besides AD or LeBron. You know, just can't happen.
Yeah, but Kyle, I get nervous looking at that roster. That I just don't think you can say, boy, I can really trust Pope, Kuzma, Caruso to come up big. I mean, I think when it happens, you know, it's something you're not expecting. And, you know, where it's like a pleasant surprise. And that's the problem. I don't know who I can count on every single night. If I'm LeBron and I go out there, I don't know. And even Anthony Davis, 8-24. Kirk in San Diego. Hi, Kirk.
Hey, what's up, Dan? How are you doing?
Hey, bud.
Hey, man, you were talking about players and how they, you know, they may, how they would be a music artist or whatever.
Yeah.
And Paul George, look, how about Marvin Gaye for Paul George? That kind of slick kind of guy, right? What do you think about that? And then one thing, too, you know, I'm a huge Laker fan, and I'm feeling a little bit of trouble. And I think with Damian Lillard, man, we got to get to his hotel room and put a hand in his face then. Don't let him get to the gym, because when he gets in there, he's going to make that shot.
But you know what? And thank you for the phone call, Kirk. But Portland didn't play that well. They didn't play as well as you thought they would have to play. And, you know, the Lakers got to somehow find a way to score. Obviously, they're going to shoot better. They can't shoot much worse than they did from three-point range. But Portland's philosophy is going to be go ahead and take those threes. And they'll probably live and die by that. And we might look at these numbers when it's all said and done and just look at how many threes the Lakers took and missed. It might come down to that. I mean, they could go and take the next four out of Portland. They could. But their road is going to be bumpy, even if they get by Portland. Because they're not going to be able to play this way and beat the Clippers. We know that. And if the Rockets are winning, and then you get Westbrook back. So, a lot of uncertainty. Nick Saban's going to join us a little bit later. The actor Bryan Cranston and Mac Brown, North Carolina head football coach. 1 hour in the books. Two more to go on this Wednesday, Dan and the Dan Patrick Show.